Hi, I'm Tyra G, your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners. Yes, you, fearsome and generous, humble and honest in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. Every week, we meet at the table for an hour to experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other through our joys and, yes, our lessons learned. We share topics that tradition tells us they're just some things you just don't talk about. But here, we live beyond both the judgment and the wreckage. We share some aha moments and stories that have been left in our pockets for far too long. Every week, we start right where we are. Although many of your voices will speak light into darkness, there is no insignificant person around this table. However, you must come dressed in your authentic inner awesome, believing that impossible is merely a word. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device. And we are webcast worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And yes, I know, that used to be date night, right? Should you miss us, no worries. You can catch us anywhere you listen to your podcasts. If you want to connect with me offline, you know you can do that. Email me at tyra@tyragarlington.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing our Frankly Speaking theme song and for naming it I'm Listening. Over the past 3 years, storytelling on Frankly Speaking with Tyra G has been intentionally thematic. The first 4 months of the show, we spent time getting to know who we were, sitting around this virtual table, locally, nationally, and internationally. We call the stories we told, This Is Us. It was so refreshing to affirm how much more alike we were than different. Other fun themes included Voices from the Future, where millennials produce their own shows, and Gen Y explained their addiction to social media, and our youngest guest was a fifth grader, a member of the McLean Youth Orchestra in McLean, Virginia. We highlighted legacy by featuring conversations between mothers, daughters, fathers, sons, brothers, sisters. One of my favorite themes was Chocolate After Midnight, where four women friends had an adult radio slumber party, laughing and sharing memories of how they became who they were, together and apart. And of course, we continue to give honor to the deserving, to include mothers, fathers, veterans, suffragettes, heroes and sheroes, servant leaders, and weekly, I pay tribute to you, my co-host, my audience. During the pandemic, though, things got personal. I've been spending a lot of time alone and pensive in the sitting room of my soul. I grieve the loss of power over my movement, my expectations, my finances, my future, my everything. I kept wondering, how can I retrieve my peace? I feel an unusual intimacy with physical, mental, and emotional uncertainty and rest. It seemed that everything that can be shaken is shaking. Where noise, angry noise, seemed to be drowning out laughter and love. I've had to intentionally focus on the reality that what is happening to me, to us, is separate and distinct from who I am, from whom you are. I have had to hold tight to the power of a thought, that thoughts can link to new possibilities, just as they can limit outcomes. Well, during this season of uncertainty, frankly speaking, has necessarily become moments of mindfulness where we flip the script of our stories to refocus on things we can impact. We found tranquility together, allowing our authenticity and vulnerability to rise above the noise. We are exposing, exploring, and putting forth positive and potential solutions for next steps we can take together toward building a healthy, inclusive nation. We're discovering and recognizing servant leaders, game changers, game-changing organizations, critical thinkers, thinkers who think outside the box, planters of seeds that drive huge harvest of creativity. All of these who live their lives in spite of, rather than because of, and bring light into darkness. These folks and organizations choose service as a method of healing both self and the nation. They will become chapters in the Book of Enlightenment we write together. Now, to create a common thought space for our beginning, I want to echo some words from a best-selling author and acclaimed coach, Iyana Van Sant, in her book published in 2000 entitled Until Today. And I quote, "The greatest service I can offer is open up to learning more, doing more, and being more. During a difficult and challenging situation, do not shut down. Open up. Just when you think you can't take it anymore, do anymore, be anymore, don't give up. Open. When you feel like you're about to fall off a cliff, jump. When it looks like everything is falling apart, start rebuilding from a rubbish and remnant pile of what is left. The only way to get to the next level is to go there. There are times when we won't recognize that it's time for us to do more and to move forward. Other times we recognize the need to move but are not sure how to act. Then there are those times when we keep putting off what we know we need to do, hoping where we are will be just fine. Perhaps you're waiting for the right opportunity to come along. In any event, when life is ready for us to move and we resist, life will move us by any means necessary. What may feel like a disaster may indeed be a graduation. When something goes thug in your life, remain open. Do not resist the need to move when your life tells you that it's time to move. Resistance closes your mind and your heart. And when your mind and heart are closed by resistance, what you need will have no way to enter your consciousness. Remain open to being taught what to do next. Remain open to healing your feelings about who and what you are leaving behind. Remain open to knowing things that you do not already know. Remain open to testing what you already know. Remain open to being guided, supported, and protected by the universe. For all you know, what you're challenged by may be the very thing you've been waiting for. Until today, you may have allowed difficulties and challenges, hard times and bad times, breakups and breakdowns to close your mind to the possible breakthroughs. Well, just for today, open your mind and your heart to life. If you're being forced to move out of a familiar situation, remain open to being told and taught what to do next. Today, I am devoted to dusting off my wings and flying. Y'all repeat with me. Today, I am devoted to dusting off my wings and flying. Well, our first chapter of our book about individuals and organizations who choose service as a method of healing both self and the nation is personal. I'm a dedicated member, and it's all about dusting off wings and flying. The story begins with a 37-year-old named Paul Harris, attorney, born and raised in quiet New England, living in noisy Chicago, Illinois in 1905. Jump in a time capsule with me for a second and look at what life was like then. 2 years earlier in 1903, the Wright brothers flew an airplane under its own power. Theodore Roosevelt was president, living in the White House. The first pizzeria had just opened in New York City, and the first U.S. subway system was also opened in New York City. Henry Ford had just broken a land speed record in his race car on frozen Lake St. Clair near Detroit, Michigan, at 91 miles per hour. And the words smog and depression became official in the dictionary that year. Now, in the years before television, radio, movies, or social media, people entertained themselves by joining clubs organized for more special interest. Now, imagine yourself at that time, a single, conservative young man, shy, with a steady income stream, finally, from his law practice. Now, that was in contrast to the 9 years before. He was eating out alone most nights, uncomfortably tolerating the commercial exploitation, the social unrest, the political corruption, and the religious fundamentalism that surrounded. Well, I guess we don't have to look backward to imagine some of those things. However, on February 23rd, 1905, in room 711 of the Unity Building at 127 Dearborn Street in downtown Chicago, 37-year-old Paul Harris and three acquaintances, Sylvester, Gus, and Hiram, who were also discontented with the social environment, decided to become game changers. They were looking for friendship and fellowship and a booster club, perhaps, and a place to practice volunteerism. But one night they met after dinner in Gus's very modest office. If you close your eyes, you can see three or four uncomfortable chairs, a broken-down desk, one engineering chart on the wall, and one coat rack. Three men dressed in creative courage and commitment enough to become planters of seeds that would harvest a worldwide organization where its 1.2 million members, people of action, would become an army of apolitical, multicultural soldiers committed to service above self. They named the collected seed they planted Rotary. When I first became a member of Rotary 11 years ago, I thought Rotary was the best kept secret in the world. I didn't feel its impact of what it was and what it meant to be a Rotarian until I attended my first Rotary International Convention in Bangkok, Thailand, with 35,000 other folk wearing the round Rotary wheel pen. It was unbelievable. There were no strangers, only members who believe that we have a shared responsibility to act on our world's most persistent issues. Our 35,000 plus clubs across the world work together today to promote peace, fight disease, provide clean water, sanitation, and hygiene, save mothers and children, support education, and grow local economies. as we write this first chapter of organizational service as a method of healing, you will see how Rotary opens opportunities. You'll meet passionate people with diverse perspectives who exchange ideas, forge lifelong friendships, and above all, act to change the world. You're going to hear about Rotarian problem solvers, opportunity creators, and community builders. You're going to learn things like Rotary is also one of the founding partners of the United Nations. Rotary's greatest project has been working toward the global eradication of polio, which was paralyzing over 350,000 children each year when it began its initiative in 1985. Polio will be the second disease to be completely eradicated, with smallpox being the first. Now, there is no better place to start this conversation than home. I'm a member of Rotary District 7610, one of the 535 Rotary districts around the world. We're going to begin with stories from our servant leaders of District 7610. My guest today, Ms. Pat Borowski, is 7610 District Governor-elect. Pat will unpack what that title means to both her and to Rotary and to you as she introduces herself. Pat, welcome to Frankly Speaking with Tyra G.
Well, thank you, Tyra. I really appreciate this opportunity to kind of share. The district governor-elect, which means I will be the district governor next year. And my background is, right now I live in the north of Virginia, which is where District 7610 is. And my background is pretty much like a lot of people, middle-class family, middle-class community. But probably the difference maker for me is that whether that community was in Brooklyn or Jersey or Chicago, they were always highly integrated communities, mm-hmm. multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-religions, and were considered by many as the, quote, immigrant communities of that time. Mm. Because everybody's grandparents spoke another language. Probably 50% never really got a working knowledge of English, and the others kind of passed by. All our parents spoke two languages. The people I knew my age or a little bit older or younger were either born in another country and came here with their parents, or like most were a first-generation American, where our parents were born in other countries, and then some were second generation. But that was really as far as you got away from the homeland. So at a very early age, I had two things. One, a very global perspective of life in the world that later I came to find out a lot of people may not have. Mm-hmm. And two, a clear sense of responsibility and obligation that if you had at any level, if you were blessed at any level, it was your responsibility to share that, to help others so that we can all be uplifted. And that was very important and very insistent from my parents, certainly.
Did you have siblings that were hearing the same message, Pat?
Yeah, I'm the youngest. My brother went away. The two of us went to college, were scholarship kids. And he became an architect, of course, served in the military for a period of time, and became an architectural engineer, and went and did fantastic things in that area in California and Houston and Hawaii. And my sister stayed in the area, but, you know, church and service certainly have been central to their lives, to be the homeroom moms and the team moms and things of that nature. And so was I. It's kind of interesting. My brother's the oldest, I'm the youngest, and yet the two of us are the most alike, and then my two sisters in the middle are more alike.
Well, you know about middle children, right?
Yes,
I'm not going to say another word. I'm not going to say another word. One thing I picked up is, stop that, is your culture, your parents, your experience created an attitude of acceptance, and that is one of the major criteria that Rotary has. And it was the dream of Paul Harris that Rotary not keep anybody out because of race, religion, any political ideals, etc. And what I'm hearing you say is that you have a servant's heart. And I didn't say this in my intro. I did say it, but I didn't point it out. Service above self is the tagline, is the motto of Rotary. Tell me how you walked into Rotary. I know how I did, but it seems to me we might have had different paths.
Well, I kind of backed into it. First of all, when we moved to Chicago, you know, you kind of, even in school, kind of learn very peripherally about something, a Paul Harris person, and it has something to do with a Rotary. And you're not exactly sure what that is. But the way I came to it is my husband actually became a member, which I couldn't believe because he always said he would never join a group that would have him as a member.
I love that. And of course, there's a backstory. Yes.
Right. But, you know, he came from Pennsylvania, et cetera. And quite frankly, his community experience was very similar to mine in terms of, you know, recognizing that so many people come to the United States as new immigrants and build great lives here. So he became a Rotarian and really enjoyed it. And I was enjoying being, you know, what I always refer to as a Rotary spouse. And but I really was so impressed with the local service projects that they did. And the Bailey's Crossroads community has tremendous number of needs. So
when you say, I'm going to ask you to make sure, since we're international, when we say Bailey's Crossroad, we're also talking about Virginia.
Yes, Virginia. Right. And it has a lot of needs. And I was so impressed with the way the club came together as a group and did all of these projects. And they did them so well, and the benefit it brought to people in the community as well as the community itself was really impressive to me. And one day they asked me if I wanted to be a member, and I thought, why not? You know, I clearly have a background tailor-made for this. And so I decided to start walking that path.
And you have had a very eventful journey. I want to emphasize that Rotary is about growing local communities, and in local environments, Rotary is all about service, and we'll get to a little bit some of the projects. But I always like to talk about the very first Rotary community project, and I smile when I think about it, because it was two Rotary community, not community, bathrooms, porta-johns in downtown Chicago, and obviously very needed. Yes. But you don't hear much talk about that. But your club has done a phenomenal job in responding to a community that is diverse and needing. And might as well talk about, just list some of the things that you do to give an idea to our listening audience what we mean when we say community service.
Well, for instance, one of the things that we have done and evolved in how we do it is our Thanksgiving boxes. We come together, we work with the several schools in our pyramid, that's what they're called in Fairfax County, Virginia. And we work with the social workers, and they identify the families. They call the mothers, they confirm that they will accept the food, and we build boxes that will feed a family of five, and we usually give out about 160 boxes. We get our third graders to make the Thanksgiving Day cards that we put in there. The middle school children help us pack the boxes, and then our high school students and our Interact Club help us deliver the boxes to the families.
Now, you mentioned a word that's foreign. You said Interact, and you associate it with the school, so let's just put a footnote there. What's Interact mean to Rotary?
Well, Interact is a club approach to it was originally high schoolers in the United States. And we would work with the school, and there would be a school advisor, just like a club. But instead of being more of a siloed competing club, it's really an umbrella club where we welcome everybody. We've got a speech contest, and it's on the four-way test. Or bringing peace building to our communities. We welcome everybody. We work with the speech teacher, If it's an essay contest, we work with our middle school students and the special writing teacher to get that done. So they begin to learn how to do community service, because in Fairfax County, middle schoolers and high schoolers are all required to complete each year a certain number of community service projects. And it can be difficult, but where do you go? The kids, so that's, you know, a part of what we do.
Now, there's something I want you to go back to because it's something you talked to me about, and that is, Rotary doesn't just all of a sudden say, oh, we're going to feed the community. These Thanksgiving boxes were personalized, customized, correct?
Yes, right. and that's when I was talking about how it evolved.
Okay.
Excuse me. And this is the value, I just want to underscore that this is the value of having a diverse club. The Thanksgiving boxes originally were packed with traditional Thanksgiving things, turkeys, dressing, cranberry sauce, etc. Well, as we became more of a diverse club, and knowing that our community has Hispanic families, has Asian families, has Middle Eastern families, and as we have drawn from those communities to be active members in our club, they said, hey, by the way, we don't eat turkey. Don't eat dressing. Cranberry sauce is not high on our agenda. So we replaced them with chicken, beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the sweet potatoes stayed, et cetera, et cetera. So we customized the boxes to the families. We do the same thing when we do the meal packaging in the ready-to-make bags, cellophane bags, and we have a mixture for our Asian families,
mm-hmm.
mixture for Middle Eastern and our Hispanic families, and then, you know, the regular for the American families, if you will. And so we apportion, we go to our schools, our social workers in the school tell us what kind of ratios they need among those different assortments, and we deliver them, and we have the highest we've ever packed is 25,000 bags.
I hope
25,000 meals.
Yeah, I hope everyone heard that. One thing we do as an organization, at least in the Mid-Atlantic, and it was my experience in Florida as well, we feed the hungry through many
yes.
programs and outlets.
Right.
One of the things I wanted to talk about when you were sharing the cultural competence you learned through the process is that it's my favorite quote from Paul Harris, and it says, "The world is a changing place, and Rotary mm-hmm. must change with it." And that's exactly,
yes.
that was just a perfect example, Pat, that we do this in all of our clubs. We try to understand our clients, our beneficiaries, our collaborators. And
mm-hmm.
what I heard you say was, what we do, we're dealing with the educational structure. So we're dealing with mental health people, we're dealing with coaches, with counselors, with teachers. And so the kids are learning diversity. They're also learning service. And we're also letting them know the message of Rotary, which I think is pretty
mm-hmm.
exciting. So we've talked about Interact, right? We know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we have another group of young people called what, Pat?
Rotaract.
Mm-hmm. And what's their role in the whole structure of things?
Now, their role, their age group is anywhere from college through the age range used to be 32, 35. It's primarily focused on college students and college graduates just getting into their business world, their jobs, graduate schools, you know, and they're looking to make a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's one exciting thing I think about young people, whether it was when I was young or my son was young and today's young people, they all share that desire to make a difference in the world, a positive difference in the world.
And I think that's
and
wonderful.
So, yeah, and so this allows them, and of course the level of project, the sophistication of projects,
mm-hmm.
Becomes much much more complex.
Yes.
Now they are, and we associate those clubs with already established Rotary clubs.
Yes.
To help give them some guidance, to be there to support them, to encourage them to come to the Rotary Club and give us new ideas. Give us, okay, how can we solve this problem differently or more effectively? And to also share our stories to help them see how they can improve their approach to their professional life. They can sit down with a several-year Rotarian and say, you know, I'm really facing this problem in work. You know, how would you handle it? Or, you know, and we can tell stories and we can share that and we can be mentors to them. And that's really our obligation as long-term Rotarians, is to be those mentors. And sometimes as leaders, it's it's probably a good idea to just open the door for the rest of the team and let them at it.
I agree, and I know when I was in Rotary in Florida, I was the district advisor to Rotaract, to the district Rotaract Club, and we did a survey, you know, what do you need from us? What do you want from us? What can we do differently? And the number one thing they wanted, they said, hey, Tyra, look, you all have been where we're trying to go. We want your stories. We want to be mentored. And sometimes I believe some of my cohorts are reluctant because I think they don't believe that that connection is desired by younger people. So we have to find creative ways to include them so that it's not that obvious, but it's very accommodating and comfortable for both the Rotaractor and the Rotarian.
Right. Well, you know, I certainly have encountered Rotarians like that. And my first comment to them is, think back to when you first joined Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know which end was up. Didn't you come to Rotary in part to network, learn things professionally about your community that would help you understand things?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, you could make it better.
Yes, absolutely.
So if we remember that, my dad, I'll never forget, always said, don't ever forget what it was like to be a student.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Don't ever forget what it was like your first day of work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes you a better manager. It makes you a better professor. It makes you a better parent if we don't forget.
I think one of the fun things I remember doing, again, when I was working with Rotaractors, we did an experiment one time, and the Rotaract Club came to one of the clubs in the district and did a role reversal. So the Rotaractors ran the club, the Rotarian Club meeting. Very interesting and energizing and fun. And that's something we also have to point out. We're talking about service a lot, but fun. We have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
fellowship.
Yes. And I made a note. You mentioned the 4-way test early on when you were talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's significant because it guides our behaviors both within the club and in our personal lives. Can you talk a little bit about the significance of that, please?
Well, I think we take a certainly a key from Paul Harris. You know, Chicago back in the turn of the 20th century was a wide open town.
I mean,
that was genuinely at that time the gateway to the West.
Yes.
It was just a step up from being cowboy heaven.
Yes.
And it was also a town that was growing enormously and fast, and people came in and people left. And one of the primary reasons that Paul Harris started Rotary was to identify others that shared his values.
Yes.
That upon whom he could rely, he could take their word. He knew that they would be people of moral character.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they could begin to do business with each other, as well as look at how they could improve and give guidance to the overall business and social community in Chicago. And that's really what the 4-way test does. The 4-way test is really another way of expressing the main principles that are common across every religion, and if you're not into religion, humanism.
Okay.
And it is to be of good character, to make decisions that are good for all, that will better all, that will build better friendships, and that will be fair to all concerned.
Yes.
And that is a working blueprint for being a person and creating a society of character.
And I think when we're making decisions as a group or individually, we can test what we plan to do against those principles.
Absolutely. And it's not just for leaders. A lot of times I hear, well, let's go to this leadership development program. You know, and I think people sort of view those as people, the programs are trying to create generals. We individually are called upon multiple times throughout our life to be a leader of conscience, a leader of direction, a leader in our home, a leader at work, a leader in community and social issues. Every single one of us is going to encounter multiple circumstances where it is important for us to put that character on the line and to step into an issue to make it better.
I was actually kind of proud of my son when he was finishing up his MBA. He actually used the Rotary four-way test as a demonstration. Yes, he did. And I was surprised because I didn't know. He was just used to me working with, talking about, et cetera. But I don't want us to get stuck in this place because this is really about you as a Rotarian. And I'm going to slip in, what is it like to be a Rotarian couple? Because I'm not interviewing Rotarian couples yet. So why don't you start there? And then I'd like for you to talk about, as a couple, your involvement in the Rotary Times TV show. Would you do that?
Sure, absolutely. As I said, my husband was the first Rotarian, and then I became the second Rotarian. I think it was very natural for us because we've been blessed that since we've known each other, we have always enjoyed each other's company and working together on projects. More socially and civic-minded than professional. We enjoy serving. You know, when we first moved to this area in North Virginia, we immediately joined a small group in our area, Fairfax County in Annandale, called ACCA. And it's a collective of Christian churches in the area. And its sole purpose is to serve people who will fall in the cracks between being self-sustaining and before social services can come in to support them.
Yes.
And that
yes.
can be anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. So given that that is something we were involved in, we involved our son so that he always understood and saw, understood what service was and saw the benefit of people really appreciating and needing that help. And so Rotary was a natural, and we enjoy working together. One of the things we work together on is the Rotary Times. This is the public access for Fairfax County, and it has been on the access channels for over 20 years.
Forever.
Maybe 25 years, yeah.
Okay.
I am periodically co-host. Dr. Deborah Jackson is our producer. And Dave helps with putting the programs onto Vimeo or YouTube,
mm-hmm.
so that we can get a larger audience. He's helped us in the interim time with Zoom productions,
yes,
because we couldn't get into the studio,
yes,
and be able to post them, and with graphics and everything else. So he enjoys that work, and he enjoys being a part of it.
And it's obvious, I have to tell you, before I started having conversations with you, I always saw the two of you, and I have a very vivid imagination, so I saw you as servant leader bookends, you know. I did.
Yes,
I really did.
True.
But let me, our time is moving, let me ask you, we said in the beginning you had a title. Quickly tell us, what is your title, what is your goal, and what is your journey looking like? And in when you talk about your journey, infuse some discussion of what it's like to be a woman in leadership in Rotary. I know that's packed, right?
Right. Well, first of all, district governor-elect means, you know, we have a district,
mm-hmm.
and it does need to be headed by someone. You're actually, when you become district governor, which I will be next year,
mm-hmm.
you are the appointed representative of Rotary to the clubs in that district.
Okay.
And your job is to assist and support and develop and listen to those clubs so that they can do better.
Okay.
They can do more. And they can do become of more value to their communities. Your job is also to communicate changes that are happening in Rotary,
mm-hmm.
explaining those changes, helping clubs understand that I know we got rid of the rule that you have to have meetings every single week, but you're not going to die. We're not changing the ethos of Rotary or its purpose or the effect of what you do. We're just changing some practices, and that's okay.
Now, what you just said, I want to park there. I'm going to interrupt you because you remember what I said about Paul Harris, the world is changing. We have to change with it. I want
right.
to emphasize that how we meet, when we meet, who we recruit has changed. And can you just quickly speak to that? I'm pushing you because you know we have something to do.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Rotary really started changing in hyperdrive 6 years ago. And
okay.
the primary reason for that was membership.
Mm-hmm.
Our numbers were dwindling in North America.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, and you have to appreciate that I've been a member only since 2012, so I don't know what Rotary was like in the back days.
Okay.
But evidently, it was kind of like a well-kept secret. You weren't supposed to talk about your accomplishments.
Right.
And the thing is, when you get to be that invisible, you are invisible. Nobody
yes.
knows it. Nobody knows what you're doing. So Rotary began to say, look, in order to meet the world as it has changed, we have to understand it, and we have to start making some changes. And the ones that you outlined were, in part, the beginning of that, helping clubs understand how to better recruit. I think clubs understand that they are losing membership. They just don't know how to think of recruiting differently and where they would go, and it's our job to help them. For my goal as district governor, because we're all part of the same team, so we, you know, Harry, who's the district governor, Sheila, who will come after me, we're all, Jonathan, who was before Harry, we all are working together to create a a more dynamic district, and help clubs really understand. And one of my major goals is to help create and support more competent and confident club leaders.
So you say that as a goal. Is that going to be your legacy?
I hope it is.
Okay.
I hope people can step back and say, you know, we really began to get our feet under us when Paparowski articulated those things better.
Okay.
Because she gave the space for Dr. Deborah Jackson and others on our education team to develop programs and, you know, have more dynamic speakers. And together our membership group put together good resource materials where and libraries so that members and club leaders can go in there and say, you know, I have this problem. Oh, there's a index subject on it. Let me see what kinds of tools and reference materials they have, examples of how other people have done it.
So I'm interrupting you again. You know me.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that I'm hearing and we're communicating to our listeners that now Rotary, in order to change with the world, is focusing on communication, on motivation, on recruitment. We're actually, like you're talking about, we didn't talk about ourselves. Now we are
right.
Moving to a marketing posture. It's critical that we tell our story in a way. It's when I worked for IBM, the whole thing was you go to where the eyes are. So if it's social media, if it's TV, and there's no one message, the messages have to be tailored. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to change up on how I want to do this. I ask you, as I ask each of my guests, to read a letter that you have written to your younger self. I want you to do that, but before you do that, I want you quickly, Pat, talk about your perception of the journey of women in Rotary. I have not talked about how we got there. So if you can do it quickly, or we can start it and finish it later.
Yeah, real quickly, when I joined, it was maybe a year and a half later that I learned Rotary did not admit women in the past. And in 1989, they changed that.
Now, stop there, because you know what I'm going to do? This just came to me. We just planted a seed. This is just the first chapter of the story. I will remind people, okay? Because here's the thing. You just said Rotary did not allow women at one time. So obviously, here you are in a district leadership position. So change has occurred, positive change. I'm going to do a set of programs on women in Rotary, but I wanted it, because you are district governor-elect, I wanted to make sure I connected your name with that fact. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be kind enough to read now your letter, and then I'll close us out if we have time on how to get back with you to continue the conversation.
Sure.
Okay.
Dear younger Pat, I'm here to tell you that the life you have ahead of you sometimes will be hurtful, disappointing, and confusing. And that's kind of the way with life. It can be unfair to you, to people you love, and to people in your community. But your job is to never let that get in your way. Your job is to make sure that you get yourself through that, so that you can discover the greater aspects of life, which is joy and great love to surround you. Listen to other people. Even when you are talking, listen to other people and meet as many different people as you possibly can, because that will make you wiser, richer, and more knowledgeable. Be sure to love yourself and forgive yourself, because that's the only way you will know how to love others and forgive others, as you'll have to along the way. Keep that vivacious spirit, that love of laughter and fun, because God knows the world needs a lot of it. But also make sure that you strive for success. Don't fear it, but don't let it control your life. And make sure you share it with others. Because where you are today was definitely made possible on the shoulders of others before you. In the end, have fun and keep the faith.
Pat, thank you. You have been listening to Ms. Pat Borowski, District Governor-elect of District 7610, a servant leader of Rotary. I am so pleased to have you with me today. And for you, my audience, you've been listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, with Tyra G. Your seat at the table is guaranteed. I look forward till next time. Until then, remember, you are stronger than you feel, smarter than you think, more beautiful than you know, and more loved than you can ever imagine. You're chosen. You're important. Treat yourself like someone you love. This is Tyra G. I love you. Bye now.